Time to get real. I want to see some crazy whiz-biz.
What's the magic made out of, ding-dong?
I want to see some of that whiz-biz.
Welcome back to the show, WizBiz, with Alex and Eric. This is a show where two grown men talk about a cartoon. I am Eric.
And I am Alex.
And together, we are WizBiz with Alex and Eric. Now see, that ended up awkward. It's hard to just do an intro on the fly.
Yeah, it's fine.
Alex.
Hi.
How you been? What have you been up to?
I've been, today I went to the gym getting swole. And by that, I mean, I'm a middle-aged fat guy, and it's every second of that is horrors beyond imagining. And I don't recommend it. Everybody should not go to the gym. Just die with dignity.
Have you managed to lift anything surprising since your gym regimen started?
Yeah, I got mad at my personal trainer, and I threw him through a window.
Oh, yeah. But he's a hobbit.
No. He is a... I have a really good joke here, but I don't remember the guy's name. There's a famous wrestling moment between Shawn Michaels and the other guy he was on a tag team with that he kicked them through a window, like back in the day. It was like this, but I don't remember it enough. So, hey, audience at home that would understand that reference, go do that now. I don't know. I've been doing that. I want to keep reminding the audience that I have been doing Twitch streaming.
Yes.
At twitch.tv/verbalex. So verb Alex, A-L-E-X-X. I've been doing that like once or twice a week, and it's fun, but it would be more fun if people showed up because it's really awkward to stream to no one.
What nights do you stream?
That's probably part of the problem. It's generally either Wednesday or Thursday or Saturday, and then either Saturday or Sunday.
Okay.
The problem is I also have two podcasts I have to schedule, and trying to get three adult men schedules to be consistent.
Oh, yeah.
Very not going to happen.
Oh, so, I know the struggle. I have one D&D game to schedule that has three people in it, and it's still one of those things where we manage to do it like once a month.
Yeah. But on that note, if you want to watch me play on that and you're not there on Twitch, youtube.com/verbalex1, the number one.
There was already a verb Alex?
Yeah, right?
With two X's?
Yeah. It was weird, but there's nothing on there. It was just like, it was just sat there.
Weird.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, it seems weird with two X's and the verb. Yeah. So I originally wanted to get, my original Twitch name idea was Inscribit, which I thought was great. Like as a writer, Inscribit. But like every version of that was taken and none of which seemed to be an actual account. It's just somebody has that registered. Like no followers, no following. It's just like, it's just there. But I couldn't find any kind of, way to bitch to Twitch, like, hey, can I have this? Because also, it's not like an established brand. I can't go like, oh, yeah, somebody sitting on the Alex cast on Twitch or something where I can approve this. But no, I just think it's cool. Can I have it? Like, it doesn't work. So, So if you are into the YouTubes, do that. If you're into the Twitch, do that.
Yeah, it's fun. I kind of like Twitch. I don't spend a whole lot of time on there, but it's a good way to pass the time. And I really enjoyed watching you play... that game where you're crawling around in the dungeon.
Oh, Hollow Knight?
Yeah. That was a really cool game.
All those playthroughs are on my YouTube channel.
Oh, and I watched you play Zelda for a little while.
Yeah, also a fun playthrough.
Yeah.
Oh, speaking of that, if you happen to go on Twitch to follow me, make sure to follow WizBiz Podcast on Twitch. Every third fortnight after the Greek Easter, we go on there.
Every time there's a grand conjunction.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, basically, it's... You know, we're just every now and again it'll happen. But I mean, hit follow. Maybe just by some weird happenstance, we or Eric.
But also, like, when we have our live streaming, we do our live streaming events on Twitch.
Oh, that's
and,
true.
You know, typically those just happen at Halloween, but who knows? Maybe we'll branch out.
Yeah.
I enjoy live streaming stuff.
Live stream for Arbor Day, baby.
Trees. All right. So in this episode.
Oh, wait, sorry. Let me interrupt you before that because I just want to tell the audience about how stupid I am.
Okay.
I was just here in my head lamenting how loud my mouse is on this table that we're using. And I was like, there should be some kind of like thing you can put under a mouse to make it quiet. So I just in my head right now just invented the mouse pad.
Wow. That's really cool. You should patent that.
It's I. it happens every now and again, but I'm a big fan of when you're smart in the dumbest human way possible. Yeah. Like, it's impossibly stupid. Also, I mean, 30 years ago, great idea. 40
yeah.
years ago, whatever the fuck that was.
Well, I have to say, it looks nice in here. Alex did a little bit of a redecorating in the basement studio, and he took the old tablecloth off the table. So now we're sitting at like a totally white table. It's kind of really brightened up the room. Everything's very shiny.
Yes.
It's a nice change.
Yeah. I'm liking it. It's also not as gross is the main thing, because that tablecloth should have been washed a while ago. And it hadn't been.
It had been through some things.
Yeah. Well, the problem is under this table. So this table is one of those spreadable ones that this middle leaf can leave. But it's like, there's like complex interactions where there's like a lever system with like cabling and stuff to get it to go back together. Mm-hmm. And it's so trying to get anything to wrap underneath cleanly is a whole. So I had like, I had binder clips. It was a whole ass thing. So I'm like, if I take this thing off, I didn't go back on. I interrupt you, Eric. Please introduce the first episode of this here episode.
All right. Well, in this podcast episode, we will be talking about two episodes of Adventure Time: Season 4, Episode 22, Ignition Point, and Season 4, Episode 24, Reign of Gunters. And we are also skipping Season 4, Episode 21, Who Would Win, and Season 4, Episode 23, The Hard Easy. Though I do have some things to say about them, we just won't spend much time on them, because I don't know if you watched them or not.
No, I didn't. The Hard Easy, I kind of remember. Who Would Win, I'm sure I watched it, but I don't remember. But also, I think it's apropos that in a show where we forget almost every episode to do the segment Who Won the Episode, that we don't discuss that one.
Who Would Win?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, we can, you know, you can do your quick recap, but it's I think it's funny that we consistently forget the Who Would Win thing, and it's like the one episode they actually say. Ah.
So I have to say, you know, like, Season 4 has been really good, and all four of these episodes, including the two that we skipped, are just excellent episodes.
Oh, are they?
Okay. Yeah. So I would definitely go back and watch them. The writing in The Hard Easy is top notch, like incredible. The jokes are great. The dialogue has this sort of like, it's smart. It's clever. Like, it's very well done. So Who Would Win? The only thing I really want to mention about that episode is that there is some dream travel in it. It's a little bit of occulty stuff where the dream warrior comes to Finn and Jake in a dream and tells them how to defeat the barn.
Oh, that's right. They fight the barn.
Yeah. Yeah. And the thing that's most special about the dream warrior is he is played by Matthew Broderick, who many of our listeners may remember Matthew Broderick as the person who bravely stood down against the artificial intelligence in the early 80s and saved the world from nuclear annihilation.
Yeah. Didn't he kill some people in Ireland too? Is that Matthew Broderick?
Was that Matthew Broderick?
Yeah, one of those 80s guys that look like that. There's a few of them.
He also had a parade thrown for him once when he skipped a day of school.
Yeah. Lip sync to Danka Shen. One of my favorite theories, you know, those kind of dumb theories that people have about movies, is that entire movie is Cameron drowning in the pool, and he's just inventing this whole day. That's why, like, I almost called him Parker Lewis. What's his name of that?
Ferris Bueller.
Yeah.
Ferris Bueller's Day Off.
Like, that's not one of those movies. I enjoyed that movie, but it's not, I don't have much attraction to it, but I like the theory that it's all in his head, because that's why Ferris is like the coolest guy that's ever been cool, and everybody loves him. And it's Cameron just kind of projecting, and then he's got the smoke show of a lady. Like, it's all just a dream sequence. And usually I don't like those theories, but that one kind of resonates.
Yeah. Well, now I want to watch that movie again. Has Jaws done that movie?
No, I haven't seen that movie since. I mean, if I've seen it since the turn of the millennia, I'd be surprised.
Speaking of Jaws, before we get started, I do want to tell the listeners that I was on an episode of Jaws recently.
Jaws is John and Alex Hate
Stuff. John and Alex Hate Stuff, to talk about Dune 2 Sandy Boogaloo.
Yes, Dune 2 How You Doin'.
How You Doin'.
Yeah.
And it was really fun. I was kind of nervous going on the show again, and I had forgotten how much fun John is. He's such a nice guy.
Yeah, John's the good one.
Yeah. And we had a really good discussion about Dune. There were some interesting things to think about. I still have such a difficult time getting David Lynch's Dune out of my head that it's hard for me to think about the Dune movies and not get images of David Lynch's Dune.
I'm quite happy that I don't really care about David Lynch's Dune. Not in like a shitty, that movie way. I just, it didn't.
It never grabbed you.
When I was a kid. So, uh-huh. Yeah, it means less than nothing to me, you know, when it comes to the Dune movies. I never think about them other than, you know, John, are you mentioning it?
I think that the first copy of the book Dune that I had was the one that came out around the time the movie happened.
Oh, really?
So yeah. I had this like big, you know, trade little paperback of Dune with, you know, Agent Cooper on the cover in his still suit.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. I mean, that book is long. It fell apart. I read it numerous times, but yeah. But it really cemented the movie imagery in my head because, you know, pictures.
Yes.
Okay.
On the John being great note, John finally let me on his other podcast.
What's his other podcast?
This May Hurt a Bit, where he does horror movies with James Strayer, who is on John Knox Hate Stuff. Anyway, they had me on to talk about Basket Case 2, which is coming out this week that we're recording. Would have been about 3 weeks ago for you listening. I think that's how math works, possibly. But yeah, it's super fun. Yeah, good time. So go listen to Hurt a Bit. Even if you're tired of listening to me, listen to other episodes. They have like good guests on but that aren't me. So
cool.
Yeah. But even for me, there's too many sidetracks for this episode. Let's talk about
the now actual- season 4, episode 22, Ignition Point, where we discover that Finn and Jake are full of magic air.
Yeah, I feel as the representative of this show and every other podcast I've ever been, as the guy that doesn't find fart jokes funny, I think I need to take like a, I don't even know, like some kind of, what's that thing like where you didn't want to go to war in Vietnam?
Conscientious objector?
Yeah, like I feel like I'm going to be a conscientious objector to the first half of this episode.
Okay.
Because it's not funny. I don't like fart humor, and all this was fart humor. However, the term you guys are full of magic air, and then her talk about how bad it's spelled, even for me, who hates fart jokes, I'm like, yeah, that's pretty fucking funny. You gotta give credit.
I have in my notes, Flambeau is back with his flame shield spell. Alex will be pissed.
It's so annoying because it's one thing that they just forget about it,
but they don't forget about it.
Bring it back up. And like, I know Finn's a fucking idiot, but like, Flame Princess isn't dumb. Or I mean, maybe she's a Vole cell, and
she doesn't seem to catch on to non-flame life very easily. Like just the fact where she's like, "You guys are full of magic air." Like she doesn't understand organic life.
You know, to use the modern parlance, I wonder if she doesn't have a flamussy and she doesn't really even need to get with Finn.
That's very possible, but I would also like to remind you that Finn is 13.
What? You didn't have sex when you were 13?
No.
I mean, they're the same age. I guess I was 14 when I fucked the first time.
Well.
I mean, I'm not saying, like,
not from New Jersey.
From a perspective of young kids be horny and they're the same age, totally fine. Yeah.
All right.
Except for the fact that apparently she's not interested at all because she doesn't go, "Hey, Flambeau." I mean, and this is the most sexual we'll ever be on the show. "Hey, could you spit on this shit so I could hit it?" Because he spit on it to do the spell.
Well, not this time. He punched.
Yeah, but the joke's funnier the way I did. And by funnier, I mean really, really gross. And I'm going to hear about this from the listeners that respond to me.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. They probably won't be as disgusted as they were with our conversation about Princess Bubblegum and Marceline.
Yeah, we did an audiogram and put that on TikTok, and people really responded with, "Oh my God, I hate this, I love it," kind of thing, which I feel like is very appropriate to my personality.
So I thought this was an excellent episode. I really enjoyed the references to Hamlet that were liberally and blatantly sort of slathered across it. And you know, the assassination plot was pretty inane. The Flame Kingdom may be full of evil people, but they are really dumb.
I can't tell if you're being, like, meta. The assassination plot is the plot of Hamlet. Well, instead of putting poison in the ear, they're putting ice cubes in the ear.
Right, but...
And then the uncle...
Except it's not exactly the plot of Hamlet.
But it is, because Hamlet's putting on a play to find out who knows about the...
That's not the actual assassination plot. The actual assassination plot, they were reaching in with an ice scoop while the king was awake.
Okay, I got you. You're saying like the mechanism, not the plot.
Yeah.
Okay, agreed. Yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not a big Shakespearean, but I'm like, I don't know if you could get away with calling Shakespeare lame or whatever the term
is. Well, I'm a huge fan of Hamlet, and I guess I should probably reveal that I was overexposed to Hamlet as a youth. My mom is a retired English teacher, and... There was a period of time when she was teaching Hamlet. And then also around that time, who was it? Kevin Costner? who starred in Hamlet? Kevin Costner and the lady who played the woman in Fight Club.
Helena Bonham Carter.
Helena Bonham Carter. She was Ophelia.
Really?
Kevin Costner.
Kevin Costner?
Maybe I'm misremembering. Maybe it was Mel Gibson. I don't know. It was one of those like handsome. Oh, I think handsome... it was Mel Gibson. Was he in Hamlet?
Now that you say, Mel Gibson was in a Shakespeare production in the, I'm going to say.
90s?
Hamlet movie 90s. Yeah, that's, I think it is Mel Gibson. Yeah, it's Mel Gibson, Glenn Close, Alan Bates, Paul Scofield, Ian Holm, Helena Bonham Carter, Stephen or Stephen Delane, and Nathaniel Parker. So Mel Gibson, Glenn Close, and Helena Bonham Carter, and then other people.
Yeah.
Yeah, et al.
Yeah, and that was just one of the adaptations that I saw, but I watched a ton of... What year did that come out?
96.
Okay, so that wasn't high school. That was college. I remember what happened now. It was because I went to college in Ashland, and Ashland has the Oregon Shakespeare Festival.
Oh, that's true.
So yeah. I took classes.
Yeah.
And I had like a whole quarter's worth of Hamlet.
Now, had you had sex by then?
Yes.
Okay, cool. So somewhere between after 13 and college.
And Hamlet.
Yeah, and Hamlet. You got deflowered.
Somewhere in there, yes.
There's one of my favorite lines in Adventure Time history in this episode, and it's subtle and no one's going to care, but I think it's so fucking funny, where they're crawling through the vents and Finn falls and hits his head. He's like, dude, why didn't you catch me? He's like, well, you got to warn me. I can't think in the future. I can't think of the future. I mean this as a compliment. As someone with no self-esteem, it's not going to come across this way, but like, that's something I would write.
Yeah.
That is so smart dumb that I'm like, I love that. I can't think of the future. It is so stupid, but also you have to be smart to be that dumb. And I love it.
Jake honestly has 90% of the good lines in the show, though.
Oh, like, yeah. But
every episode. But usually it's either like, him or Ice King.
But usually when it's like it's an obvious line, like it's an obvious joke. And that one you have to like, at least for me, you take a second and be like, that's kind of amazing.
Another little thing that I really liked about this, you remember, so they came across the cook who has like the weird flower face.
Oh, I need to talk about him.
So when he was running around, he has a little tail like Charizard. He's got a little, or Charmander. He's got a little flame on the end of his tail.
Okay, well, I need to talk about other things.
Okay.
First, correct, cute. But more importantly, the room before that room, there's a guy taking bites of cake and measuring it.
Yeah.
The next room is that guy, played by Paul F. Tompkins, who is doing his Cake Boss impression from his various things.
I don't even know what that is.
So Cake Boss is I'm from New Jersey. I'm the Cake Boss. I'm on TV and my entire episode is like, I need 3 days to make this cake, but you got two on my own. I can't do it in 2 days. That's Paul F. Tompkins. That's Alex doing a bad impression of Paul F. Tompkins doing a humorous impression of Buddy Velastro, the Cake Boss.
Okay.
But it's like directly that. I'm like, oh my God. I love Paul F. Tompkins. He's like my favorite guy. And I'm like, oh my God, Cake Boss. And he's in the kitchen. But then when he meets the theater troupe leader, that's Paul Tompkins doing his Andrew Lloyd Webber impression. And I'm just like, this is the joy of joys.
that's awesome. I had no idea. I don't think I know this guy at all.
Unless you know him, you're not going to know him. I know that sounds stupid, but it's not like there's a thing I can point to. But if you're in the kind of the sphere that's aware of him, he's been in everything, everywhere, all at once. And though he's not in that movie, I just mean he's been in a bunch of shit. Yeah.
So anyhow, I love the interactions with the cook. I love where he's like, my bloobies.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. It's a good episode. The reason that I kept it as a keep episode instead of a skip episode. Well, first of all, the Hamlet stuff, we'll talk about that in a second. Second, the whole Flame Princess storyline, I think, is important enough that we need to sort of stay on top of it
and
make sure that we keep talking about it. We see some hints that Flame Princess is a little dangerous in this episode. When she gets a little irritated, she sort of explodes into her big fiery monster self for just a second, which we had seen in Finn's dream in The Worm King. So, like, he is secretly terrified of her.
Yeah, we also saw it in real life in the first time he was hitting on her.
Yeah. And, of course, actually pretty much every episode in with her real life.
I think the audience, they would have meant but also there, but that was such a weird way to word it.
Kissed her and she went nuclear. And
Yeah. So, talking about, let's just do the Flame Princess thing here.
Okay.
Is Finn realizes that everybody in the Flame Kingdom is evil.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, Flame King is basically saying, of course she's evil. She's from here. And that's where the alignment line happens.
Yeah.
Where it's like, well, what if she's really into a guy? Can the guy change her? He's like, well, there'd be penalties to her experience points if she acted out of alignment.
Yeah.
And I'm like, ah, I like them just hanging a hat on it. Like this is directly, yes, this is a reference
to Dungeons and Dragons. Yeah. It's a reference. Yeah. He asks if she's evil or maybe she's chaotic neutral, which is still pretty bad.
Yeah. It's like, come on, it's neutral. I feel like I'm chaotic neutral as a person.
No, I don't think so. I never see you hurt people or do anything that's not, I mean, you strive to be good.
Yeah, but I'm kind of chaotic.
You can be chaotic good.
Oh, can you? Yeah. Okay, I want to be chaotic good then. I feel like that's what I am then.
All right, but yeah. If you act in a way that is not chaotic good, there will be experience point penalties.
Yeah, I'm down. Okay. I'll take it.
All right.
But here's the question. If you act out of your alignment, is being evil in the Flame Kingdom being good? So, like, being evil is because you're going against the social order is what we reference as being evil. So if you're in an evil society and you act good, are you now evil by the kind of inverse property?
So this is the biggest problem with the D&D alignment system, yeah. Right? Like, it doesn't make any sense.
Yeah.
Because evil and good, there are, like, you know, absolute – you can strive towards the absolute good, which is, you know emulating the virtues of the divine or whatever. There isn't really a way to, like, strive for absolute evil unless you want to be just a complete prick. But, like, a lot of things that would be considered evil then would be, like, not taking care of your mental health or your physical health at all. Or, you know, there's all sorts of things that are just sort of the opposite of what you're urged to do in sort of a capital G good sense.
Yeah.
But in Dungeons and Dragons, you get the sense that the good and evil that they're talking about are mostly along sort of like socially relative lines, which means that entire societies it doesn't work. It's not a very good way to determine that kind of thing.
Yeah, it's a good thing it's a board game.
It's a role-playing game.
Yeah, I guess there's no board, is there?
No.
Okay.
No, you can get bored, though.
I guess a tabletop is the phrase.
Yeah, I think they call them now tabletop role-playing games.
Is that the deal? Yeah. I don't, I've played almost no Dungeons & Dragons.
You know it's Dungeons & Dragons' 50th anniversary?
Is it?
Yeah.
Oh, well.
It's old.
Rest in peace, Gary Gygax.
And Dave Arneson.
Is he dead, too?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, rest in peace, asshole.
Hey!
You know my feelings on him.
There's nothing wrong with Dave Arneson.
Yeah, probably not. I just thought it'd be funny to say that. Yeah, so let's talk about Hamlet.
All right. So Hamlet came about at a time. So, like, anybody who sort of, like, studied Renaissance magic knows that there are, like, really interesting references to actual, like, sort of like occult and magical ideas in a lot of Shakespeare's plays. And a lot of them are sort of like pop references, right? So they would be sort of considered like maybe pop superstition or something of that nature. And so Shakespeare was alive during I do want to warn any English majors and Shakespearean scholars out there that I'm going to sound like a complete idiot for a few minutes here. This is just my understanding of it, and I totally welcome any and all angry dissent. So just...
That was me snapping my knuckles into the mic.
Come at me, Shakespeare bros.
Yeah, let's go.
Shakespeare was alive during the reign of Elizabeth I, who was, and there was sort of like this view of her at the time as this kind of, you know, she was a spiritual leader as well as a secular leader, because she was also the head of the Church of England. But she was sort of wrapped up in kind of the neo-paganism of the Northern Renaissance, in this kind of like weird fairy mythology that was sort of put forward in, Spencer's poem, The Fairy Queen. She was sometimes referred to as Gloriana and sort of seen as the sort of like otherworldly ruler of the mystical realm of England. And in a lot of Shakespeare's plays, he will bring up stuff that sometimes seems to be like direct references to or refutations sometimes of occult works from like the 16th century and earlier. And so you see a lot of like supernatural elements in Shakespeare's plays, and it's not always clear which of them would have been believed to be truly supernatural, or which of them would have been believed to be like actual things that were around at the time. Like, you know,
oh, gotcha. Yeah.
So in Hamlet, for instance, there's the ghost, Hamlet's dad as a ghost comes to him and is like, you have to solve my murder. So
as ghosts do,
as ghosts do. So there's this sort of like driving force in Hamlet that is supernatural and might be the reason that the whole story even happens.
Well, the whole story really happens because they kept saying, they said Hamlet's dad three times, and he goes out and he goes, "It's showtime." Sorry. My only point here, I'll get away for you to finish yours because I have a point on this, but please continue. I was just saying that because you're taking a sip, and I thought,
oh yeah, I feel like I don't think though that Adventure Time brought Hamlet into this because of any sort of like occult reference or anything like that.
Well, no, if you're going to bring occult references from Shakespeare, it'd be Tempest. Like, there's even the theory that that's about John Dee.
Yeah, but yeah, I mean that's the definitely the most obvious one. Yeah, but there are still quite a few of them sort of sprinkled throughout, and amongst other Elizabethan playwrights also.
Yeah.
However, I think another really cool elemental thing that happens. So in,
wait, are you moving on from Shakespeare?
Huh?
Are you moving on from Shakespeare?
Yes, yes, yes.
Oh, I just wanted to say Queen Elizabeth, her court astrologer was John Dee, famous.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
One of the most famous, you know, a weird occulty people from that
from
era.
Ever. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Like, he's like the guy.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, there's a bunch of references that John Dee that, so the reason that Shakespeare knows so much about court, the inner workings of the court and occult stuff is that at one point he kind of fucked off and hung out with John Dee for a while.
Mm-hmm.
And John Dee taught him the ins and outs of courtly life so he could write about it more accurately. Because one of the main arguments that Shakespeare wasn't Shakespeare is that you're just some schlub from somewhere. How the hell do you know about, you know, aristocratic doings?
Yeah.
You wouldn't know that. And that's why the whole, like, no, he's actually insert other guy here. But the one I like, and I don't think it's true, but I like the idea of Shakespeare going hanging out with John Dee. It feels like the kind of you know, the Avengers. You know, like,
oh yeah, it totally does. Yeah. That interaction between that, you know, a fictionalized version of that interaction between Shakespeare and John Dee is portrayed in John Crowley's Egypt Cycle, which is a great series of books that I really think you would love.
I think I may have read one of those. That sounds really familiar to me.
Yeah, they're big, but they're awesome. I love them. I did want to bring up, so like, the interaction between the elements is sort of like a really big part of the murder plot, right? So they talk about killing the Ice King with water, and they're like, no, we'll use ice. It hurts more.
Yeah.
And I like that because it sort of maintains that consistency between the four fundamental elements in Ooh, which are slime, candy, ice, and fire.
Yeah, true. Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah.
Yeah. So that was kind of cool.
Yeah.
I like that.
Yeah, I just like that they tried to pour ice in his ear and as like the most dumb Hamlet reference ever. It's so stupid. I don't know. It's not stupid.
God.
It's great. It's just when he doesn't have ears.
Yeah.
So it's just, I don't know. The absurdity of it is amusing to me.
I read a really stupid sentence in a book recently where somebody was talking about, they're like in a wintry place and they're getting water out of a well and it's really, really, really cold out. And they describe the water as cold, like liquid ice.
That's awesome. That's like one of those Bulwer Lytton things.
I know. Yeah. Like, wow. That's, your editor is really on the nose.
No, that's terrific. I do enjoy a bad line like that. Let's do a segment.
But all right.
Before we do a segment.
Okay. Segment. Segment. Segment.
Oh.
Segment. Segment.
I hear.
Alex.
Yeah.
Do you have any shiny rocks?
Lisa, not a game. Lisa Nagaib!
Do you have any shiny rocks?
Etouan Sherdlou! Do you know what Etouan Sherdlou is?
Yes, I do.
Damn it! I was hoping you didn't know this one. So I'm going to tell the audience, because okay. Your smarty pants knew it already.
Well, I mean, I've taught classes on cryptanalysis.
I don't know how that's related, but I'm going to describe what I think it is, and then you can correct me.
Okay.
So back during the kind of pre... What do you call that? What era are we talking about?
Well, Etouan Sherdlou would be, I mean, assuming we're talking about the same thing.
It's not linotype. Oh, whatever. I'll just describe it.
Well, linotype definitely, dealt with it, but it's you tell people. Tell
yeah,
people
I know, but I'm just blanking on the term. Anyway, in a previous form of printing.
Typography. Yeah.
No, but it's not typography. So the idea is like,
they just called that a type.
Yeah, but there's a specific word for it. I don't care.
Yeah, yeah.
That you had to set an entire line when you're it's basically an early form of typing.
Mm-hmm.
Type out an entire line, but if you fuck up at all, you can't just go back and work over it. So what you do is you fill it up with nonsense,
mm-hmm.
and they decided that the best way to fill it up with nonsense would be type the way that their keyboard was laid out. All the most common letters were on the left. So they'd run their finger down the leftmost column and the column next to it, which would fill out Etouan Sherdlou.
Mm-hmm.
It's almost like an opposite of a lorem ipsum, where it's like you're filling this up. But the thing is, Etouan Sherdlou, the idea is that when you're a copy editor, you would see that and go, oh, well, obviously I don't include this line when it goes to print.
Mm-hmm.
And as somebody that's ever copy edited out there, listen, boy, does that not get noticed often. And it became this, but it got so well known that it almost became personified, that like it almost like became synonymous with gremlin. Uh-huh. So like you got attacked by Etouan Sherdlou. Etouan. I keep saying Etienne, but whatever. It became like a person. So when they were moving away from that type of typesetting in like kind of the 1960s-ish, you know, computers started
coming after Linotype, yeah.
God, I can't remember the actual word. Who cares?
Typeset?
No, there's a specific kind. It's like a lead-based typesetting, and I don't think they called it Linotype. It's a – who cares?
Okay.
The point is, Etienne Sherdlou, I don't care about the technology behind it. I mean, I do. I should have memorized it, but I didn't. Is when that was going away, they held like full funerals for him at newspapers and stuff.
I love that.
Etouan Sherdlou found they would. But it's just this interesting thing. There was this incredibly well-known thing for 100 years, and I never heard of it before. To the point that I'm like, I wonder if this is like a bit that somebody made this up. And then, but I looked into it a little bit. Like, no, it's like legitimately a
So. The Etouan Sherdlou, I don't think that that exact sequence of letters is used in cryptanalysis, but one of the easiest hand ciphers is also one of the easiest ones to break, which is a substitution cipher, just a simple substitution cipher. And you begin that by mapping out the most common letters that are used, and you're like, okay, statistically, these follow
That makes sense, because that's how they set up their keyboard. So it's kind of they came from the same line of thinking.
And they probably would have set up their keyboards based on, you know, earlier movable type, where you had like a typeset with the itty bitty little letters, and you probably had like more E's than any other letter, right? So they probably already had Etouan Sherdlou from before, because when you bought a typeset from a type maker, they would have carved you more E's than any other letter.
Yeah. That's cool. I didn't even think about that. So I just looked it up while we're standing here. It's hot type is what I was thinking of.
Hot type. I don't think I know that method.
Linotype is the arrangement of letters is linotype.
Okay. And so hot type is the...
I think you actually cast it in like hot lead.
Yeah. I think linotype uses lead. Linotype might have been a brand name.
Yeah. So the letters are typecasting machine keyboards. So linotype and inotype. Or the layouts.
Okay.
And then the hot type is basically you lay it out and have to pour like molten lead into it. So you end up having a whole line. So obviously you can't get away with using whole line if half of it's misspelled. So you throw in Etouan Sherdlou.
Which is crazy. Yeah, that's awesome. That's so cool. Thank you. That's a great shiny rock.
I
love how it hits multiple interests.
Yeah. I'm going to give you a link, audience at home, that I found a video on it that the guy really describes it like quite quickly. I heard it as a reference on, I was listening to some BBC podcast and some just, I think it may have been In Our Time, but some nerdy ass nerderson, he's so nerdy, I want to punch him and give him a swirly.
Damn, that is nerdy.
Yeah, like nerdy, but he beat it as a Sherdlou, rest in peace. I'm like, what is that? Is that a dissonant? Like what the fuck is Etouan Sherdlou? Like I've never heard those things before. And, it just reminded me of, at my old, shop, I was working with this lady and she'd been in the print industry. So I work in the print industry now. And this lady, she'd been in the print industry for, I'm going to say 25 years. And, I was doing, a book printing and we're like, hey, we should probably talk to the customer. There's like a bunch of, lorem ipsum on this page. Like, I'm pretty sure they don't want us to print this. And she goes, what? Like there's lorem ipsum on the page. Like, this is a pretty expensive print. I can't imagine they want that in their final product. She's like, I don't know what you're talking about. She'd been in the printing industry for 25 – I was like half an idiot.
Well, I mean
– 25 years and never heard of lorem ipsum.
That's interesting. I mean, lorem ipsum is – from what I understand, it's mostly used in digital copy.
Yeah, well, I mean, I print from digital.
Right. Yeah, but yeah. When you do design on a website, you use lorem ipsum everywhere.
Yeah, all the time. No, it's like really, it's like a well-known thing. It's not some Etouan Sherdlou shit. Like this is like, it was kind of shocking.
Do you know what? I kind of feel like we should be what do they call it when you want two fictional characters to be in a relationship? Lorem Ipsum and Etwan Erdlu, we should ship them.
Hell yeah.
Yeah.
Or like ship the, I don't remember the poem that Lorem Ipsum came from originally, but whoever wrote that poem, we can ship with.
I think it's from Cicero.
I think so.
And I don't think it was a poem. I think it was like the introduction of a book.
I don't remember. I looked it up one time.
Lorem Ipsum Dolor? It's something about being in pain.
Oh, is that the deal? Okay, yeah. I looked it up years ago. Yeah, that sounds right. I just want to do one more quick, really, really quick thing I found out.
Okay, hold on. Hey, Alex.
Yeah.
Do you have another shiny rock?
And I'm sorry that this is taking so long, but...
You don't need to apologize. It's a podcast.
How do I want to introduce this without giving away the punchline?
Okay.
Do you know where the phrase "sing the quiet part out loud" comes from?
Oh, I feel like I've encountered this before, but no, I don't.
So you're familiar with that phrase?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. So in my head, I'm giving away too much, but whatever. Guess within 30 years when you think that phrase came out.
Saying the quiet part out loud, it feels to me like a... Oh, wait, do you mean it's within 30 years of now? Or you want
no,
me
no,
to,
I mean, I'm asking you to guess.
You want me to get inside all, a 30-year
50 years, sure. Just all window. Of human history, guess where you think that phrase comes. You know, like, if you could even say Shakespeare times if you think it's Shakespeare times.
Wow, that's a tough one. I mean, if you had told me a 5-year period, then I would have been like, oh, it's going to be somewhere in the last 100 years. But a 50-year period, let's guess Chaucer.
That is, I mean, it's a terrible guess. But, okay. but I'm with you. Because when this was brought up to me, my thought is, saying the quiet part out loud, that feels like probably...
It feels like
19th century, late 1800s, maybe? Like,
really, it feels to me almost like a joke from like the early 2000s.
Well, it turns out it is. It's from the fucking Simpsons from 1995.
Oh, really?
It's from an episode of The Simpsons, which I'm a huge fan of that show. I was obsessed with it. This is the absolute... epicenter when I was obsessed with that show.
Yeah,
I knew it from that show. It never occurred to me that that's where it's actually like where it's fucking from. They just
saying the quiet part out loud
because it's Krusty the Clown saying I forget the actual quote is, but it's something along the lines of like, why are you here doing this job? And he's like, well, you could say it's for the worship, you know, doing well for the children, or you could say, I got a lot of money. Oh, I said the quiet part out loud. and it's like, it's so stupid. It was shocking to me that is such a, like a well-crafted, I mean, they're amazing writers back then, but like such a well-crafted phrase. It's such a part of the lexicon. And it's from fucking 95 from an episode of The Simpsons. Cause like literally Chaucer's a good guess.
Well, I mean, I was super off,
but you know what I'm saying? Like, it's.
Well, I knew it wasn't going to be Shakespeare because you said Shakespeare. Like, okay, so it's not Shakespeare.
But it could like, fit there. It could be like, oh, it's from 1790, whatever. Oh, yeah. It could be Washington wrote about it literally anything.
So, okay, before we get into our next full episode, I do want to talk a little bit about the Hard Easy, which is one of our skips. First, this episode is just incredibly well written. So even though it doesn't have a whole lot that's sort of relevant to what we're trying to do with this show, if you are doing a watch through on Adventure Time, go watch it. It has excellent dialogue, lots of great references. It's got some fairy tale references, which are kind of fun. It has the only real prince in Ooh. We also have like, you know, in Ice Kings,
the only real
prince. So
wait, who's in the prince in that
episode? Prince Huge that. Is the prince in that episode. Everybody else is a princess. And then, of course, there's Prince What's-His-Face in Ice King's head as part of the Fiona
the Prince
cake.
Bubblegum. I don't remember what his name is. Yeah.
And Prince Huge is played by Brian Doyle Murray, who you would know from Caddyshack, Groundhog's Day, Wayne's World. Like, he's like
being related to his much more famous brother.
Yeah, being related to his much more famous brother. But he's, you know, basically like a famous grumpy old man.
Yeah.
In
I mean, he's good.
Movies.
He was in Get a Life, which is one of my favorite TV shows ever.
Oh, God, I forgot about that.
Yeah, it's a great, terrific show.
And he also, there's also sort of, so it's a good episode. So it's definitely worth watching, but we're skipping it. So we won't discuss it anymore. Instead, season 4... Episode 24, Reign of Gunters.
Yeah.
I loved this episode
so
much.
Insert Slayer's Reign in Blood, except Gunters.
I loved this episode. I took so many notes on this one. It's got Huntress Wizard, who's one of my favorite characters, and the one that.
So we talk about my attraction to characters way too often on the show, or my lack thereof. But like, this was watching Huntress Wizard. This one, like, Huntress Wizard's kind of foxy. I never really
Huntress
like
Huntress Wizard is kind of foxy.
I didn't put it together into this one. It was like real mysterious and doesn't give a fuck, just leaning on a wall, just being cool. I'm like, damn, Huntress Wizard.
I should tell you that, like, do you know about trackers? They're like a real world thing. Yeah, yeah, yeah. So
I don't know why I said that. No one knows who Keats is on the show. Sorry, our friend works at Trackers.
Keats. Everyone knows Keats. Maybe. Yeah. Anyhow, they've got a place in Portland.
Yeah.
And there's a bar right next to that place. And sometimes if you go and hang out at the bar at the right time, there'll be people who like wander in there with like a bow and arrow.
Oh, really?
Like a quiver of arrows and a bow. And they'll just like sidle up to the bar. So I kind of do have sort of like a half fantasy of like sitting in that bar at some point and, you know, some Huntress Wizard will just walk in.
One of the, I love that. And I'm there for you. I hope I'm there with you. One of the few times I was in the American South, I've been there a bunch of times, but I mean, never hung out for a while. But anyway, I was in, I think Georgia, but a group of hunters came in and they all had like their guns on them.
Uh-huh.
And I'm from fucking Northern New Jersey. Like I've seen a gun, but like, uh-huh, I never like, and they're like two booths away. I'm like, they just have like guns. Like they're just guns like in the fucking Waffle House or whatever.
Wait, the fuck you wanted to leave them in the car?
I'm not blaming them. It was just like my brain didn't know how to process it. Cause it's like, I know those from TV. Like they could have walked in with like a unicorn and be like, same reaction. Like, oh, I mean, I thought they were fake, but I mean, I guess they're real. Anyway, so Reign of Gunters.
Yeah.
This episode starts off with Gunter feeling a little frisky and stealing what is essentially the Eye of Agamotto.
Yeah.
From Ice King. But I do love that the Eye of Agamotto is underneath his Lazy Boy, mm-hmm, next to some kind of psychic glowing cat.
Oh, that's Gunter's kid.
I don't remember that.
Oh, we just talked about that a couple episodes ago. That doesn't,
I mean,
so Gunter,
I'm sure you're right, but my brain is turning into mush over the years, and I don't remember, and I apologize to you, and mostly the audience.
I don't have the notes here, but you can look it up. Gunter had, there was some sort of weird magic thing that happened that made a kitten come out of Gunter. So that is Gunter's child, that pink magic kitten.
It's cute as hell.
Oh, yeah, and very destructive.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's so much cool stuff in this episode. So, like, one of the things that we've talked about over and over is how the technology in Adventure Time is kind of confusing.
Yeah.
But Ice King does have some sort of internet sort of thing.
Yeah.
And he visits the wizard market online in this one.
Did you catch any of the stuff that's on the screen?
Yeah, I didn't write any of it down. I mean, it was fun. It was a lot of cute little jokes.
Yeah, because I paused it and nothing really jumped out as being, it's like, interesting enough to, like, transfer, but like, I mean, there might be hidden shit. I didn't, like, you know, I just kind of skimmed it.
Yeah, nothing's okay. maybe I don't know, it was just a lot of funny little jokes.
Yeah.
I wrote down a quote, and I'm almost certain this is a Jake line because I write down Jake's lines all the time. But so Gunter gets the Eye of Wishing, the wishing eye,
a demonic wishing eye,
eye. Yeah. And apparently his wish is an army of Gunters.
Yeah.
That's how it starts.
And like shape-changing Gunters.
Yeah, shape-changing Gunters. But we get introduced to them in the treehouse when they wake up Finn and Jake. And like Finn wakes up and he's like, Jake, wake up. There's penguins everywhere. And Jake like opens his eyes and looks around and goes, oh, this is unusual. And he goes back to sleep.
Yeah, he grabs a penguin and uses it as a pillow. Yeah. It is quite adorable.
So Ice King, who is looking for a replacement demonic wishing eye, goes to the Wizard City, which we will see again in a few in other contexts.
Yeah.
And I loved it. He like flies up, he says the password, and he just flies right in. The password, of course, is Wizard's Rule.
That's right. As he said it in the episode, I'm like, oh yeah, Wizard's Rule, I remember that. And yeah, I just blanked out. I do have one of my favorite quotes of this episode.
Yeah.
It's where he's leaning outside. He's like, hey, Huntress Wizard, is this where you buy magical spells? He's like, yeah, you know, kind of making fun of him. And he's like, why don't they just use, you know, lettering on the sign? Great. And then he just starts going off on some weird communist manifesto of equal distribution of magic to the people, right? And then, but that is where he references, he got that from JT Dog Zone,
which will
come up later in the episode.
And he calls it intellectual wizard politics. So we've got like a really good.
Hey, you gotta shoot your shot every time you got a shot to shoot.
Yeah, that's he tries, you know.
Hey, it worked once.
It did.
Well, he nailed Betty at one point, right?
Yeah, but that was before. That was way before Dog Zone.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, and we saw how that happened in Fiona and Cake. It was different.
Yeah, but I mean, I'm still proud of him. You know, get you some Ice King.
Oh, and also he had the Frankenstein princess that he made of all the other princesses.
Oh, sure. So he goes into this what he thinks to be like a potion shop.
Uh-huh.
And he essentially runs into the Freemasons.
Yeah.
Eric, I would like you to describe this as somebody that actually went through with the Mason stuff, and I went to two meetings and stopped showing up.
I mean, you know, it I loved it. They were just sort of...
I went really in-depth detail. I need you to tell all the audience what the handshakes are like, what happens at the 32nd degree, details.
Well, I mean, the 32nd degree involves a lot of sitting and listening to people talk.
Ugh, yeah, I don't want to know about that.
But I love their wizard hand sign. They make a it's W Wu-Tang. With their hand.
Yeah.
But it's Laser Wizard, what is it, Grass Wizard, and Bubo, who was in our original.
Yeah.
And that, so
was
that,
there another one there?
I think it was just three.
No,
of them.
I think you're right. Yeah.
Well, Huntress Wizard was outside.
Yeah.
But yeah, they're talking about all their secret, you know, oaths and all that kind of stuff. There's like initiations and oaths and et cetera, et cetera.
Well, there's a great, like, it's basically they give the Green Lantern screed because they're like in shadow. Yeah. We find the light. It's like, oh yeah, okay. Okay, Hal Jordan.
But on the wall is a literal occult, like real world occult reference. There is a word written in Theban.
Oh, really? The yes. Witch's alphabet.
The witch's alphabet, which reminds me, I this mysterious letter arrived for you.
Oh, excellent. Oh, I'm going to open it using my witch fingers.
Wizard thumbs.
Sorry, I ripped your really nice envelope, but like, I don't know if you know this, but like, I have really bad thumb issues that I've been going to physical therapy for. Like, I can't feel my thumb.
That's
so
cool.
I just had to start ripping things. Okay, we got a Theban alphabet here.
Uh-oh. Can't read it. Oh, well.
No, I mean, honestly, somewhere on the shelf, to like within arm's reach, I have a Theban alphabet translation thing, because I was doing weird sigil work with the Theban alphabet. But I'm going to guess this says, Ivan Netniaj, Gino Giwa Sharnina Batsidaran, Ed Shuwaran Dan Shivan Ivan Netniaj.
Oh,
whoa! Winsodo Giasadan with Ivan Netniaj, H.O.N.A. Nito Bag. So, I mean, I think to be clear, people that like The Simpsons will know what I just did right there. Eric, you will not. Can you please tell me what this says?
Nope.
Okay. Do you want me to get my phone? I bet you Google has a Theban translator.
You could certainly try. Wait. I'm going to tell the audience about Theban, though, a little bit, because it has a great history. So the Theban alphabet, which is also sometimes known as the witch's alphabet these days, was originally published in 1518 in Johannes Trithemius's Polygraphia.
I'm not interrupting you, but I feel like we've talked about Theban on the show before for some reason.
Really?
I think it came up. Anyway, sorry. Please continue. I'm having either deja vu or what other people would like to call a memory of talking to your friend.
I think we might have talked about it on the Alex cast a while.
Oh, that might be it. Yeah, that's very possible. I seem to remember you and I speaking about it at some point.
Yeah, I suspect we did. So the second, and then it was republished in Heinrich Cornelius Agrippa's Three Books of Occult Philosophy in 1533. And then after that, it started showing up all over the place. But it's kind of a cool looking weird alphabet where almost every letter looks like it's either an M or a super droopy U.
Yeah.
So the word on the wall in the wizard's chamber is April. It just says April.
Oh, I mean, I wonder if that's a reference to
O'Neil
from the
Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
Yeah.
No, I would guess it's probably like the name of one of the animators' wives or something like that. When Trithemius first wrote about the Theban alphabet, he said that it was originally invented by Honorius of Thebes, who has, you know, grimoires named after him and stuff like that. But there's really literally no evidence of Theban any time before 1518. So Trithemius may have just invented it on the spot to stick in his book.
Oh, yeah. It doesn't have Theban in Google Translate. That's unfortunate. Aww,
you're going to have to do it by hand.
I mean, it's somewhere in this pile. There's a English to Theban, because in my I'm a cool chaos magician days. I started to find it counterintuitive to use the Latin alphabet to make sigils. You know, like the Peter Carroll style.
Yeah. Sigils. I mean, so you started doing sigils with Theban.
And various other languages, but Theban was the easiest one because, like, it's, you know, to condense what you just said, it's some bullshit from a couple hundred years ago that somebody made up.
Yeah.
That it's a little bit easier to do a one-to-one to English than, like, trying to be like, oh, well, how do you do Sanskrit to, so yeah, I was doing that for, that was my attempt. But it also, that got kind of annoying because, like, it's such a weird, like, the way to write it. It's, like, so precious. And
yeah, I have a better method that you might enjoy more using another one of the alphabets that I can't remember if this one showed up in Polygraphia, but it's definitely in Three Books of Occult Philosophy. Yeah. There's, like, this angelic language that's it's easier to make sigils out of. And Agrippa gives a really good method for it that predates Peter Carroll by 500 years.
Oh, yeah, totally. Yeah, I just – the whole sigil, the chaos thing mm-hmm. is, you know, it's so Peter Carroll.
Yeah. So the Ossian initiations, tying that to Freemasonry, I'm not sure that it was necessarily a reference to Freemasonry as much as it was a reference to, like, the Golden Dawn or some of those other initiatory.
It's just initiatory nonsense.
Right. Well, I don't know if it's initiatory nonsense. I think that it's an important part of the Adventure Time world. And I like that it's included, and I like that there's a thing there because it does come back later. That sort of theme recurs, and we do see more of that later.
I meant nonsense as a reference to the real world. It's nonsense. It's just grabbing a bunch of stuff and throwing it. Yeah. Like, lights and stuff. Yeah, the light, the crown, cool, whatever. Yeah.
I really liked it. I thought it was cool. I loved that part of the episode.
I just like the Wizard City.
Yeah. Wizard City is such a great idea. I want to go to Wizard City.
And also, I guess we should probably talk about, I mean, one of the sources of the name of this show is this episode. He refers to, like, crazy whizbiz.
I know. I mean, like, you know, which I loved at the end. You know, he's crazy whizbiz over at Wizard City.
Yeah.
And then also, wizards only fools, keep it tight.
Yes.
Which maybe we should use that as the sign-off for our sign-off quote for some episodes. I liked it.
Yeah, whatever. I'm down.
So back at Candy Kingdom, you know, Finn and Jake rush over there, and while they're doing their trek, Finn brings up that he's being mysterious because he's future farming.
Yes.
So can you tell us what the hell is that about?
So future farming, I believe, so it's a book, it's a reference to a book by J.D. Dogzone in this continuity. But what I believe it is a reference to the game that awful How to Pick Up Chicks book from the early 2000s-ish, which there's a lot of, like, be mysterious, neg them when you first meet, like, as in give them something that's not necessarily, like, insulting them, but, like, kind of insulting thing that's, like, you know, to make them want you. Be like, what, really? You think I'm... And it's this gross kind of thing. And
so that's sort of like pickup culture, sort of.
It is. It's literally a pickup artist book. Ugh, yeah, yeah.
God.
The game is how to game the system to have sex with women. The reference to in the.
So it's like Andrew Tate bullshit.
But well before.
Well before. Well before.
Like, he hadn't even trafficked his first woman when this book came out.
Okay. And hopefully. I mean, this Adventure Time episode came out a long time ago, too. So that was probably pre-Andrew Tate also.
Yeah. I mean, I can't tell how old that man is.
Andrew Tate?
Yeah. Like, he could be 27. He could be 53. He's got.
I don't want to think about him anymore.
He kind of looks like that guy creature. From Goonies.
Yeah.
Whatever, the monster in the base. Sloth. He kind of looks like Sloth from Goonies. Yeah. Except not as nice.
So, Finn has the demon sword in this episode. He actually he hasn't been using his sword at all. All the adventures we've been seeing him on, he hasn't been pulling his sword out. So this Reign of Gunters, Finn sees as a world-threatening event. So he pulls out the big sword.
Yeah, because, I mean, Jake looks at the world through a telescope and realizes that the Gunters have already won. They've taken over everything. So, I think it's getting your ultimate weapons of destruction out is a worthwhile cause.
Which is pretty badass. Unfortunately, the Gunters are unstoppable. That demon wishing eye is perhaps a little bit too powerful.
Yeah, I mean, it is like the Eye of Agamotto.
I wonder, what was Ice King going to use it for?
I mean, given Ice King, probably a snack. You know, like, try to get somebody to be interested in him. We need to talk about the most important part of this episode, Eric. PB's outfit.
I was just about to bring that
up. Oh, good, yeah, because she's...
Warrior PB's outfit is smoking.
Yeah, she's got... shin protectors on.
She's got the cool friggin' earrings. Got
cool earrings and like a
short ragged skirt thing, almost like a.
I'm glad you said ragged, because I was struggling to describe how you describe that, the kind of, I'm going to say, upside down pyramids at the bottom of fabric.
Yeah.
It's not fringe.
It's yeah, but it looks badass.
Ragged feels good. Like,
she looks ready to take on the world.
Yeah.
Way more than she does in her normal, like, princess gown thing.
Yeah. I like the earrings, too, because she doesn't generally have ears, so it's...
Right. So it's interesting. Flame Princess, in the other episode we talked about, she was in a new outfit for the first time also. But it's great seeing them add these sorts of, like, variations to characters where you can still recognize the character, but they're, like, wearing different clothes. They've got different hair. They're doing something different. It's a sort of detail you don't see in cartoons like this very often. So that was really cool. And then the other thing that we really have to talk about is the Gunter Voltrons.
Yeah, Gunter Voltron is kind of great.
Because we just saw those in King Worm.
Yeah.
And that's a really strange... So it really makes the King Worm episode even weirder.
Yeah. Or it just speaks to the illustrators going... This is fun to draw Gunter as Voltron.
Maybe.
Let's try to fit it into another episode. My favorite thing is where Gunter reaches, like, he basically coughs up from his own gullet a hand holding a sword.
Oh, God.
That's cool.
All of them do. All the. Yeah, that's just,
but
yeah.
Yeah, they attack the city and basically win. But I love Finn's plan is just collect all the bottles because they like smashing bottles. And that'll distract him. It's like, well, how do we get, I don't know.
And then, then they run out of
plan is we're going to Jenga these back together. Puzzle them back together so they can be broken again. Also, maybe the first time Ice King saves the day in the show, which becomes...
It's possible,
not a regular thing, but he
starts helping out.
Heroic figure in the show.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if you remember the last two episodes of this season, but they're tough ones. Our next podcast episode, we're going to have to talk about some emotions.
Do you know them off the top of your head?
I think one of them is called You Remember Me, and the other one is called The Lich.
Okay. You Remember Me. Which one is that?
Episode 25.
Yes. Okay. Yeah, that's going to hurt.
That's a tearjerker of an episode.
Yeah.
And then episode 26 is The Lich, which is also a tearjerker of an episode. And then we launch into season 5, where things start to get serious.
Yeah. Which is, you know, we've lamented on the show before that. Our conversations about the show that led to starting WizBiz is, I think most of our conversations were season 5 and on. Not that I regret doing these first 4 seasons, but like, I'm like, it's at each season, at the end of the season, I'm like, man, I'm looking forward to the next season even more and more. And now it's like, oh, I think we're actually watching Adventure Time now.
Yeah.
Like even these episodes, like this feels like the Adventure Time that I'm fond of.
Like the skip episodes this time, I loved, you know, They felt like D&D adventures. They felt like character builder. You know, they weren't necessarily character builders, but they were like real adventures and stuff. So I feel like we're really getting into the actual Adventure Time part of Adventure Time. Yeah. I'm very excited about it. I don't know that I have any more takeaways from Reign of Gunters, except of course we should mention that Gunter being more intelligent than the other penguins and more dangerous than the other penguins does presage his eventual revelation as Org Malorg.
Yes.
And that's going to be, I think we're still a couple seasons away from that, but that's a really big one because it deals with some strange cosmology.
But that's so deep into the kind of lore of the show later that if that showed up in these seasons, it'd be the weirdest thing that happens in the season.
Yeah.
And by the time that shows up, just like kind of not, it's not like, oh, it's just another episode, but it's not like that would be earth shattering if that was in season 4.
It's sort of like when you watch Buffy the Vampire Slayer and at some point you're sort of like, oh yeah, the world's ending this season, this episode too. Exactly. Well, I guess they got to take care of that.
Yeah. Really? Angel fucked somebody else and became jealous again? All right. Great. Okay. Oh, Cordelia. Sure. I guess I was technically from Angel, but
so I mean, I think that's kind of all I've got for Reign of Gunters. I loved this episode. It's packed with fun stuff.
Yeah,
there are great little occult tidbits in it, and PB's outfit is great.
Yeah, the one other thing I would posit on this episode is Eric, Who do you think won these episodes?
I mean, we've only got... Can I pick one of the skip episodes for a winner? I can't, because then you can't really say anything about it.
I think that your name is in the title, and you do whatever you want.
Well, can we pick Flambeau, or did he do too much? He was just there for a second.
I mean, again, your name's in the title. You do whatever you want, but I feel like that's main character.
Okay, I agree.
Not in the episode, but like Flambeau's like, you know, we all know who Flambeau is. You can pick one from your skip episodes. I'll give you it.
You know what? I think I might pick Huntress Wizard. She hardly did anything. She had very little dialogue.
I'll give it to you. And you're wrong. Because the answer is Flame Pepper, played by Paul F. Tompkins, or Dramatic Troop Leader, also played by Paul F. Tompkins, or The Cake Boss, or Andrew Lloyd Webber. Either of those
all
wins.
Played by
Paul F. Tompkins. Yes.
Okay, so yeah. You're just saying Paul F. Tompkins.
Paul F. Tompkins wins, even though he's technically not in the episode, but he is an actor in them.
I had forgotten about your Paul F. Tompkins thing. The revelation, the Paul F. Tompkins revelation is special to me. I am willing to concede to you again. There will be an episode someday where I will pick the winning.
I think you have character. One.
Maybe when it was Pep Butt.
Yeah. If PFT wasn't on these episodes, I would say that Phantasmagoria Gunther number 4 would have won the episode, because I thought that'd be funny to say, but I'm like, I can't do it with PFT in it. Eric, I challenge you, good sir, to tell the audience where they should do stuff and things and actions to be called.
My favorite call to action is, once again, like, tell two people about this show and tell them that you would like them to listen to this episode in particular. I would like you to tell, first of all, your very best friend, the one that you have brunch with every weekend, the one that you have coffee with all the time, the one who listens to you and you complain about your job incessantly. Tell them, be like, oh, you know, this one tonic has provided a soul light in my life, aside from your light, oh best friend. And it is WizBiz with Alex and Eric, a delightful podcast where two fully grown, mature men who absolutely have both lost their virginity and not to each other, they talk about a cartoon. Yes. The other person you should tell is your worst enemy, because I don't think people should have worst enemies, so I think you should call them up and you should be like, dear worst enemy, I am sorry that there has been enmity growing between us. I'm sorry that that the foulness that exists between our interactions has darkened the light of the world. As an olive branch, I would like to extend to you a podcast recommendation in which two delightful human beings who may or may not be complete virgins discuss a cartoon. And then tell them about WizBizPodcast.com. I would say
what Eric just said, but tell Katie and then David. Yeah. So we will see you in a fortnight. Thank you for listening and goodbye.
The ending was not believable.